All right, wait, don't skip this. It's not an ad, I promise. I got three important things to talk to you about real quick before the podcast starts. Number one, we have begun our Android history project. This is a really cool look back at the beginnings of Android as an operating system and making its way to phones. And you're going to hear from a lot of people that you know in the industry. It's going to be really cool, a lot of fun. We're doing it over 8 weeks. So go to historyofandroid.com to check that out. Number two is if you haven't updated your Android Central app yet, do so. Version 2.0 is out, and we now have material design. We are still fixing other things, and we have new features coming. Very important that you update. So do that as soon as you can. Just go to androidcentralapp.com. And finally, we have some really awesome pure Android shirts and hoodies and more, t-shirts, long-sleeve shirts, short-sleeve shirts, anything, well, not anything, but a lot of stuff you can absolutely get and wear and show people that you are pretty awesome when it comes to Android. So go to androidcentral.com/pureandroid to check those out. Now it's time for the podcast. Thanks, everybody. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 259. We're doing this one on Thursday, October 22nd, 2015. Welcome to the show. I am Phil Dickinson. We're doing things a little different this week. We got a familiar face back again, J.R. Raphael.
Hello, hello. Good to see you guys.
Where do we find you most of the time? Where do you live? Not where do you live. Tell us where you live. Show us your stuff. No, where do we find you?
A detailed street view map.
Yeah, where do we find you online these days?
Yeah, easiest place is if you go to my own personal website. It's links to everything. It's jrstart.com. But most of my stuff lives over at Computer World. I do a blog there called Android Power and then do a lot of other different reviews, features, how-tos, all sorts of crazy stuff.
See, Andrew, I told you there are other Android websites out there. He didn't believe me.
You keep me sheltered.
Andrew Martinick, everybody.
Just sheltered over here in Seattle doing my own thing.
It's been a weird, crazy couple weeks. I'm like 13 different kinds of out of it. So we're not going to have voicemails on this podcast, but please record yours and send it in to a podcast at androidcentral.com. We will catch back up on those next week. I probably am forgetting something else. Andrew had to remind me a minute ago that it was actually time to do the podcast. So it's going to be one of those shows, I think. But we've got some weird, interesting stuff to talk about. I want to talk some more Nexus, obviously, and get JR's take on it. I still haven't actually touched it. Well, I mean, I did take that back. I was at the launch of announcement event in California. But mine is on a truck waiting to be delivered, my 5X finally. Retail. Andrew, meanwhile, has to send his back, and it's no longer working.
I mean, so count yourself lucky that maybe you were, a week later in production and you got one that actually works. That'd be nice.
Things happen. Meanwhile, I have this. I've got a V10 sitting here from LG.
No way.
It's the Korean model, though. So it's all Koreaned up, and I'm not quite, I'm not getting LG.
Is that the white and like kind of gold champagne-ish one?
It's pretty hot, actually. You want to talk about this real quick? Yeah, let's do that.
I've only seen the black one in person.
I remember the black one feeling a little more rubbery than this. This is
the black one really reminded me kind of the old Droid Turbo, the black one with the texture on the back, but it's more rubbery. It kind of felt rugged.
There is a lot to like about this. I mean, in many ways, where's my G4? In many ways, it looks and feels, you can tell my G4 is dusty. Oh, that's so wrong. It's a little bigger than a G4.
The G4 is already pushing it.
It definitely feels bigger. This is very much, and I've been using it for 2 days now, trying to retrain myself with this big phone, and you can see if you can see it up there. It's got this little, this little edge screen, this little secondary, there it is, screen up top. And the idea is, you've got app shortcuts, you've got media controls, you've got, people shortcuts, which is kind of cool. But I'm very much a one-handed phone user, so I'm trying to force myself to use it with two hands. And I think if you're a two-handed phone user,
much at the top of the phone where it's kind of hard to reach with one hand, right?
Especially with my little mutant hands. but if you're a two-handed phone user, it could absolutely be useful. I got to go out and play with the camera some more. Manual control over videos, which is very cool. I put up a quick little sample of 24 frames per second, 30 and 60 from lunch yesterday. So a lot of cool stuff. It's not a huge departure from the G4. Mainly, the camera, the dual screen, and a little bit of the software. But overall, it's the same experience, just in a large phone.
How are you liking the secondary mini screen so far. Is it doing anything for you, or just kind of a novelty?
No, it's weird seeing notifications up there. I'm still trying to get used to that a little bit, because it basically plucks them from, you know, instead of the notification bar, they end up there in that top screen.
So it's that like, just that reminds me exactly, I think, when you were unboxing this, and I just sent you a link to my Galaxy Note Edge review to look at with all your complaints, because they're the same exact complaints as the Note Edge, where they took something out of the standard Android interface and put it somewhere else.
Right.
So on the Note Edge, they took notifications and just started mirroring them on the Edge. And they took your bottom quick launch bar and just put those apps on the Edge. And it's like, well, once you get over the confusion, which there is a confusion because you're used to the way a phone works, do you really get extra utility from just having the same exact thing in a different place? I didn't find so on the Note Edge. And this one seems a little odd as well.
I can't figure out, like, you can't screenshot it. So I'm not entirely sure how they're doing it, which is kind of strange.
Developers would have to directly target that if they want to put anything, like, informational in there, right? Otherwise, it's just, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it's just an app launcher, notifications. You get media playback controls there, right?
Yep. So, yeah. I mean, it's different.
It's a notification shade.
Yeah, yeah. It's just way up there. I mean, you pull down from it, and it's still, I'm not sure if that triggers it or if it's just when my finger hits a little lower and triggers the normal one that it
kicks. So when you tap something that's in it, it opens it in the main screen. It's
right,
just kind
right,
of
right.
It's a viewing area, but it doesn't interact or.
Right, so they're not putting like a, you know, a sports ticker or something in there like they did on the Note Edge.
No, yeah, not yet anyway.
That's good.
Oh, I just realized it has some little quick things for when the screen is off. Got vibration
control. That's the one thing that sounded intriguing to me. Yeah,
yeah.
The screen off part of it, but I mean, depending on how it works, it does seem like every few years someone tries to do this. It's kind of like
we've
got a cool thing we can do with technology. Let's find a reason for it to exist. And I don't know, it is a cool thing, but I think you've got to have the reason for it to exist first in order for something to succeed. So
yeah,
I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I mean, I haven't used this phone myself yet.
I could see it being usable. Like you said, when the rest of the screen is off, or like, you know, you see the time, notifications, things like that. And they said if the little mini screen is on the whole day, it only takes up 5% of your battery or something. But then you think about something like what the Nexuses do with the ambient display, where, you know, when you get near, you touch it, it pops up the time and notifications, and Motorola does that just with a hover. That seems like a better way to give you that little bit of information while not having to do this crazy thing with the little extra screen up there.
Yeah, it's just not quite as noticeable as when you get that sort of notification just right there in the middle of the display.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm nowhere near declaring judgment on this yet. It feels pretty good. Even though it's big, it still feels good in the hand. I think they've done a nice job with that. The fingerprint sensor takes a little getting used to, because I'm coming from a Note 5, so I'm used to, you know, just being able to push the button, the fingerprint fires off, and it goes to the home screen, which actually it did here. But the problem is, if I push the button once to turn it on, and then I push it again, it turns off. It's just a little different paradigm.
So it's not like the Nexuses, where, because the Nexuses is not a button. It's you place your finger on it and it turns on and unlocks in one swoop.
Right.
You have to press the button to activate the screen before you can unlock with it.
So I'm sitting here tapping it right now.
And it does nothing.
And yeah. So like I'm not pushing the button. I'm just,
I see.
Right. I'm just tapping
the finger. It's the same as the Note or the Galaxy S6, where you have to have the screen on first.
Right.
In order for it to be reading.
Well, I mean, and you can do it all in one fell swoop if you do it right.
Right.
And that takes a little bit of practice, but not much.
Well, you know, I'm not a fan of having to push the button on the back anyway.
Oh, yeah. And you know how I feel about Samsung's implementation. It's kind of a mess.
Well, that's the thing. The one thing I found about the Nexus in my 6 hours using it before it finally gave up the ghost was how nice it was to not have to hit the power button or anything to turn on the screen first. You just pick up the phone, put the finger on there, and it opens and unlocks all in one thing. There's no, and if you need to, for whatever reason, you can just unlock normally with a pin or passcode or whatever. So Samsung is a little funky in in that respect as well. I know you don't like the lock screen on the Samsung, how it does things.
And there's a little bit of play in the button itself. So like when you touch it, it moves just a little bit, you know, like rocks up and down. I can see people complaining about that. You know, I'm not going to lose sleep over it, but it's something you definitely notice.
And it has to be a bigger button there. So are the volume buttons smaller than they are in the G4?
That's a good question. Let me look. It looks pretty close. I mean, yeah, probably maybe a little less surface area, but not a lot. And once you're there, your fingers know where to go. But it's, you know, it's an LG phone. The software hasn't changed very much. So a lot of the headaches I had with the G4 are still here. A lot of the stuff, you know, that's turned on out of the box, I turn off. You know, the quick shot, you know, you double press volume down to launch the camera. But by default, really it automatically takes a picture. And it's like, okay.
Oh, yeah, that thing drives you crazy. I had so many
pictures. Or the inside of, you know, the top of your pocket or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I did that post about, like, the first five things to turn off on the G4, and they're all applicable here.
Right. So who is the V10 for if they didn't like the G4?
So the way they explained it to us was basically the G line is, like, your normal kind of awesome, badass smartphone. It is more for consuming content than creating content. They want the V line to be for the, you know, the creators, the people who are serious about video, serious about sort of, you know, the filmography aspect of it. I mean, shooting 24 frames per second on a phone is kind of crazy. And I need to do some more samples just so I can really tell the difference in between 24 and 30. You know, 30 to 60, it's obvious. I get that. But 24 looks a lot different. There's a lot of audio stuff in here as well, in the way that it, you know, records.
Yeah, directional.
Yeah. Huawei was kind of doing the same thing. That's cool. Some playback stuff, which maybe you'll notice, maybe you won't. I don't know. I got to try that some more. It's a nice phone, and it's big, but it belies its size a little bit. It doesn't feel quite as big as you might think, but I think it's definitely a two-handed phone if you want to use it right and really use all the stuff. Dual selfie cameras. Yay.
Well, there's a reason to buy it right there.
I know, right?
You got to have the dual selfie, right?
Because you can't just have one angle on your selfie. You have to be able to take two.
Yeah, you've got to. I won't buy a phone without dual selfie.
It'll stitch them together into a super wide angle, right?
It will. No, it will. There are two angles to it, is what it is. I think one is 80 degrees and one is 120.
Oh, I thought it could use both to give you a super wide one.
No, what is the, let me look up the numbers real quick. I forget what it is.
I mean, that would make sense too. You have, you know, just you or you and another person, right? Or, you know, a big group of people.
It will make like a collage of them. So you can have, you know, hey, here's,
you know, Samsung and Huawei and a couple others will do like a panorama selfie type thing.
Right. It's 80 and 120. Kind of. So yeah.
Kind of works, kind of doesn't.
Yeah, it's a big phone. So we're getting on, you know, everybody but Sprint here in the U.S. is going to carry it at some point. Still don't know when. I would imagine fairly soon.
Yeah, this is already a few weeks out from the announcement.
Yeah. So it's nice. It's big. It's, you know, if you want a bigger G4, here you go. Still only a 3,000 milliamp hour battery. So I don't have a good feel for that. Because, again, it's a Korean phone here in the U.S., and I'm on HSPAP, which was a new one for me.
You don't know HSPAP.
Well, I mean, I know HSPA and HSDPA and HSUPA, but no, HSPAP was a first for me. I don't even know what it stands for.
Well, I guess you didn't have T-Mobile.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, and I've got a T-Mobile SIM.
Historically, yeah.
Yeah. I need to try an AT&T SIM. I mean, I'm getting like 4 and 3, you know, down and up, so it's not the end of the world, but it's still a little different. So that's that. Yeah.
Forgive me for not being too excited about the V10.
Yeah. Is anybody? I mean, it's kind of like, oh, that's.
I had forgotten about it until Phil got the phone in. So
it's, you know, if it's one SKU, right? It's a 64 gigabyte SKU, which is good. 4 gigs of RAM. And I like the idea of the camera stuff. I don't think it's unimportant, but is that really a selling point?
Well, and my big thing is, couldn't that all have been in the G4? Except for some of the microphone stuff, maybe, for different microphones. But, I mean, it has the same processing power and camera.
Yeah, and I'm not 100% sure what's coming. Like, through a software update to the G4, maybe? I don't know, because really the rest of the camera is the G4 camera. Same sensor. Right. I mean,
we have the same situation on the GS6 and then the Note 5, where they have the exact same camera hardware, same internals as well. But, you know, you have the YouTube live recording, you have way better manual controls, and you have some different settings and raw capture and things that just aren't on the GS6 yet. And they're, you know, it's not high on their priority list for getting that backported to the old device.
If I had a G4, I would have a hard time, you know, arguing for somebody to get this too.
Oh, yeah.
Or instead.
But what if you have, you know, if you have a G3 or a G2 or something, it...
I think you're really going to want to be able to do video in 24 frames per second. You're really going to want to have dual selfies.
Right.
And the audio stuff, just for me personally, is not a selling point at all. I think most people are listening through such crappy headphones anyway. And I need to try the LG earbuds that came with it and see. But most people aren't going to tell, I don't think. Anything else on that? Oh, you know the biggest news? Nano SIM, finally.
Oh, they were. That's right. They were still using micro on the G4. I had to buy an adapter when I got my G4.
It makes me so happy. That's a small thing.
It would be nice if every phone one day just started to use the same. You wouldn't have to have the cutters and adapters and everything sitting around. I mean, it's a problem more for people like us than normal people, admittedly. But
what
still,
other phones?
Nice.
Well, what other phones are left? Does anyone else still use?
I know I had to break out an adapter not long ago, but I can't for the life of me remember what.
Well, I'm trying to think, but new phones that were released with a micro.
Was it the Mate S? I think the Mate S might. I'll have a SIM tool in front of me.
I know that when I just swapped on my Note 5, the tray is definitely big enough to be a micro, but it's only got a little spot for a nano. So I don't think there's anything else released in 2015 that's a micro SIM.
These are blogger problems. Everyone listening is like, really? Yeah. Really?
Micro, nano? I mean, this only comes up for people once every year and a half or so when they go, oh crap, my SIM doesn't fit in the new phone because they've changed standards.
Most normal people just walk into the carrier store and say, right, hey, can you give me the right SIM for this? Or if they buy it in the carrier store, they just do it while they're there.
I used to do that with unreleased phones. They're like, what are you putting it in? And I show them, like, what is that? Nothing.
Nothing, just give me the new SIM. Shut up.
Can't talk about it.
No questions.
Really? Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk more Nexus. I want to get Andrew's full story because it's pretty funny. I think it's funny. If it happened to me, I'd be pretty pissed. Hang on. Be right back.
Yeah, let's turn it off.
At this point, everyone understands that in the right situations, open source software is important technology. It's useful and powerful. No one really disagrees with that. I mean, the most successful open source project of all time is a little thing called the internet. Tim Berners-Lee put the www in the public domain, and of course there's Berkeley Unix, TCP/IP, BSD Linux, Android, the Internet of Things, you get the picture. The only real disagreement is whether open source can be used in an enterprise situation to do the most important work. Well, Red Hat has been settling this debate one customer at a time for more than a decade. They started with Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and today they certify and support application development, storage, and cloud infrastructure for every conceivable enterprise deployment. The New York Stock Exchange, DreamWorks, each and every airline, healthcare company, and telecom giant in the Fortune Global 500, they all rely on Red Hat. In fact, more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 are Red Hat customers. Why? Because they get that the powerful, constantly improving innovation of open source without the risk of having to do it alone. It's that simple. Red Hat, enterprise software trusted in the world's most demanding data centers. Find out what they can do for yours at redhat.com. All right, Andrew. Pour a glass of wine.
It's 11:25, actually.
All right, so pour two.
A little early.
It's a lot of day left.
And it's Thursday, not Friday. I was it's not really a beer podcast at 11 o'clock on a Thursday.
He said wine. It's a whole different thing.
Yeah. It's sophisticated.
Well,
tell us what happened to your Nexus 5X.
Okay, so I got the Nexus 5X, and obviously it comes out of the box charged, so I don't put it on the charger right away. I get it all set up. I have all my apps installed. I start logging into things, syncing things. Gets down to like 50% battery. I'm like, oh, okay, time to plug it in. Plug it in, and it crashes to some crazy error screen that I've never seen before. That is a and it's an LG like diagnostic crash screen asking, you know, gives all of your phone's information, the board number, the serial number, the eFuse number, asks you if you want to do a RAM dump connected to your computer. And I'm like, well, that's not really a thing I should be seeing. Okay, Nexus, whatever. Unplug it, reboot, plug it back in. Same thing. 10 seconds later, it crashes to the screen. So it turns out no matter what cable I used, power source, anything, 10 seconds on a charger, no more than 30 seconds on a charger, and it would crash out to this screen. And so it turns out that it just wasn't taking a charge at all when it, unless it was booted into the OS for those 10 seconds. And so now it is completely dead. It will not turn on. And so I chatted with Google Play support, and they were like, yeah, we're going to, you know, elevate you or whatever to the Nexus support team that only deals with Nexuses. No, they had never heard of this before. Okay, great. So now I have a new one on the way.
You broke it already. So it was, right now,
that easy.
JR is the only one among us with a working 5X.
Yes. That's why. Yeah.
That's actually why I forgot when the podcast was, because I was sitting here refreshing my FedEx thing. I'm like, all right, can I go get it? Is it at my mailbox? Can I go get it in time for the podcast? Turns out I couldn't.
And now you're going to get yours before me.
Yeah. So what do you think, JR?
Yeah, I mean, the Andrew stuff is pretty bad. That seems like a fluke thing. I haven't had anything like that at all.
It seems extremely fluky. That's not something to expect at all.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I've had a so far great experience with both of them. I'm using the 5X and the 6P here. It's white. Ooh, and white. I think the carbon, basically the black one of the 6P. Yeah, so I'm kind of going back and forth. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kind of going back and forth every other day, you know, trying to spend a day with each, then going back and forth and doing some comparisons. And, I mean, I'll be honest, I usually tend to like a smaller phone just in terms of size. I've never been a big, you know, phablet kind of guy. It's never been my thing, just in terms of comfort and ergonomics. But I mean, using these two, I'm really on the fence as to which one personally I prefer, because the size and the form of the 5X really is so nice, and it's just so comfortable to hold. It's right in that, you know, perfect sort of dimension that it's, you got a big enough screen, not so big, it's comfortable to carry. But then the 6P just has a lot of nice things going for it. You've got that premium build quality, and more than anything for me, the display on the 6P, it just kind of spoils me to go from my eyes. It spoils my eyes when I go back to the 5X. And some of that's personal preference. Some people prefer the LCD on the 5X over, you know, the AMOLED. You know, it's obviously a lot more saturated, and some people don't like that look. For me, once I've been looking at the 6P, it's harder for me to go back to the 5X. And I think if I just had the 5X, I would probably feel differently. But when I go back and forth between the two, that's something I can't help but think about. And, yeah, if I were to pick one right now, I am honestly still on the fence. I don't know which I would go. But, yeah, all in all, Google really hit it out of the ballpark this year. We've got two compelling options in their own different ways. And, you know, the price is back down to a point that, how can you argue with that? It's not like last year's phone where it was priced more sort of normal flagship. We're back in that really great value sort of area. And there's not a whole lot not to like about these. Not to say they're perfect, but as far as Nexus phones go, I mean, these are among the best we've seen, I've got to say.
We've been talking a lot about the renewed importance of Nexus devices. And I don't think that's always been the case. But especially now with this new focus on security and monthly updates, I'm still going to kind of believe that when I see it a little bit, just because I worry a lot when it comes to OTAs. They are not easy to do. And in getting users to do OTAs once a month is a big deal, especially, you know, 6 months in, you've got 100 apps on your phone, and you've got to sit through the recaching. Like, if they do it in the middle of the night, that's one thing. Cool. But I want to hear your take, JR, on whether you think Nexus phones are, once again, the most important. Like, if all things being equal, is this really the one phone you should consider for those reasons?
I think there is definitely more of an argument for that now than ever. I mean, Nexus phones have been a weird thing because they've been so many different. They've meant so many different things over the years. You know, they're originally sort of like a reference device, a developer's device, then an enthusiast device, and then, I don't know, last year maybe kind of a mainstream device. You know, they were being sold more broadly and at a normal price. So it's hard to know. The brand has meant a lot of things. But, you know, I think it's kind of coming back around to the point of being sort of the flagship Android phone, which is in a way what it's always been, but I think it's living up to that name again. And between, you know, having actual Google level of Marshmallow software, which it's getting increasingly compelling to have that, to have the pure Google software. There was a time when enthusiasts loved it, but, you know, it was really lacking a lot of things. Nowadays, pure Google software is great. And when you go back and forth between phones that have that, whether it's a Nexus or, you know, a Motorola phone that basically has that same kind of UI, and then you go to other devices, you're talking about like LG, that really go all out with these arbitrary visual changes and just kind of gunking it up, it's a world of difference in user experience. And, you know, if I were recommending a phone to somebody who's not an Android user and is getting their first Android phone or first smartphone, I would certainly want them to have that better experience. And then you add in the stuff like the ongoing updates, that when Google makes some big grand announcement of whatever it is, you know, at next year's I/O, Android 6.1 or whatever it might be, that these great new features are coming and things are going to look different this way. If you got a Nexus phone, you're actually going to get that. Whereas if you have another phone, you may or may not ever get the update. And when you do, there's no telling what it's going to look like and what parts of it you'll get. It's getting more and more difficult, I think, to justify spending more money on another phone that doesn't have all of those features. And that's not even getting into the security stuff, like you mentioned. And when you can have that for, what, $379 on the 5X and $499 and up on the 6P, and then you look at other flagship level phones to pay $700 to $800 and lose out on those features, gosh, it is getting tricky. And other phones have their benefits, but these phones close the gap enough that it's no longer like, you know, you get a Nexus phone, you're going to have a crappy camera, but you get X, Y, and Z. You know, maybe it's not the absolute best camera out there. I think we're still kind of all evaluating that, but it's we've seen enough to say that it's certainly a very good camera on both phones. And it's yeah, I think it's getting trickier to justify having other devices, which is a weird thing to say, I realize, but what do you guys think?
I'm really looking forward to trying some more fingerprint stuff on M, and it's still early. Andrew and I were just talking about it. Like, I use 1Password for my passwords, and I really want that to implement the fingerprint stuff, and they say they are. It's just a matter of when. But I also started using Samsung Pay finally this week. I snuck in on my Verizon Note 5 and got it when it was accidentally available for a little bit on Sunday, and it works great. My God, being able to, you know, tap the magnetic thing is downright magical. I'm curious if Android Pay is going to be quite the same experience, especially in all these places where it's not obvious that it takes contactless payments.
Yeah, I think that the fingerprint stuff and Android Pay are important parts. So are the app developers updating to use permissions properly. Mm-hmm. Like, that's going to be important. More and more apps now obviously are in kind of the material design look, which just adds to that cohesive design that and solid design that JR was talking about in Marshmallow. So, you know, that stuff, you know, comes down the road 6, 9, 12 months from now when, you know, people, you know, not everybody buys a Nexus on day one. We should know that, you know, they're going to sell in the next 3 months through the holidays as well. But I think that once you get into that, like, you know, once you get locked into, hey, I really like the way that this fingerprint sensor works on the Nexus, because, yeah, a lot more, I think in 6 months, a lot more app developers are going to be supporting the Android built-in fingerprint than are going to support Samsung's own fingerprint API. And that's going to be that turning point where, sure, Samsung might have showed up first with that, and there are some apps that, you know, I bank with Bank of America, and they just now added fingerprint support for Samsung phones, even though it's been available since the Galaxy S5. They just added it to their app because at the same time they added Touch ID on the iOS version. And that's something where, you know, it took them 2.5 years to do that.
That's kind of the weird pain point right now, though, is Samsung Pay takes 2 years. Very few cards right now, when Android Pay will just suck in anything.
Right. Well, yeah, that's a whole nother
thing. I know. Yeah. And you've written
that. They shouldn't do that anyway.
That'll get better.
But that's a thing. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Samsung is going to have less leverage. I mean, if we're talking about Samsung Pay, Android Pay, they're going to have less leverage to say there are this many devices out there using this service, because It's only on specific devices on certain carriers in the U.S. That's it. Android Pay, they'll let you install it on anything running Android 4.4 and above. It doesn't matter where you bought the device or anything. It just has to have NFC and Android 4.4. And that gives Google a little more leverage to go to these banks and try to get more supported banks on board. And then, you know, the bank starts to support it, then, hey, maybe they're going to support fingerprint APIs in Android as well for the banking app. And then now all of a sudden you want to have a phone that uses Android's own fingerprint solution rather than a third party one. And I'm not sure, is LG using their own? Do they open that up to APIs on the V10?
I don't know if that's in their SDK. I'll have to look.
Because on Samsung, you know, it's just like supporting multi-window. You have to specifically target their sure. fingerprint solution. And, you know, some of the password vaults do. Most of the password vaults do, because, like I said, it's been around since the Galaxy S5. But when it's just built into Android, when it's the same, when adding fingerprint support for M is the same as, you know, flagging to have a floating action button, then it's just like, why, you know, every app is going to start supporting that stuff. And it's just going to make more sense to have that rather than have this, you know, separate track of all these different APIs on another phone above just the design being weird and, you know, not working the way you want it to.
Yeah, I think that cohesiveness is a key point that you touched on too, because, you know, really in the last couple of years, Android, well, Google on the whole, has kind of settled into a very recognizable and distinctive design pattern with Material Design. And you use a Nexus phone, or, you know, to be fair, a Motorola phone, to some degree a Sony phone, they're kind of moving in that direction. And you have this sort of cohesive feel. It makes sense. Everything kind of fits together. Whereas you look at a manufacturer like Samsung, LG, or even HTC, and to different degrees, they're kind of trying to build their own ecosystem within the Android ecosystem, you know, both in terms of visuals and appearance and in terms of, in some cases, their own services. And you end up just kind of getting this mishmash of, like, conflicting visual styles and overlapping services, three different apps that do the same thing. Yeah. And, you know, we can negotiate through all of that, and most people who are listening to this podcast can probably do that with ease. You know, maybe it's annoying, but you can deal with it. But just imagine, you know, someone like someone like your mother trying to go in and figure this out. Someone who's not as tech savvy, at least I can say this for sure about my mom. Love her to death, but, you know, technology is not her forte. And trying to think of her looking at, like, four different apps that do the same thing or five different functions that do this, it would just be a nightmare to navigate through that. And I think that's what another part, too, where the Nexus lines are pulling ahead, that really just in the last couple of years, that's starting to be a factor, that you're getting, I hate to say, almost like an iOS sort of experience in a way, in that it's this sort of end-to-end cohesive thing. The hardware was created to work with the software, to highlight the software. The local, you know, device user interface matches the rest of the ecosystem. And that's something that Android has lacked for a long time, and the, you know, third-party manufacturer devices in a lot of cases still do. So that's I think, becoming a more and more important advantage that Nexus has.
And you're seeing it get better. HTC has cut way back on the A9. We'll talk about the A9 here in a minute.
So has Motorola.
Motorola has, obviously. Even LG has. When I talked to Dr. Wu a couple weeks ago, he specifically said, look, we cut back on a lot of stuff, and there are places the manufacturers can't. There are still hooks that need these specific browsers for, you know, various reasons, or, you know, calendar apps and things like that.
I mean, I think we talked about this maybe a month ago, where Alex and I were talking about the built-in apps on the Note 5, because you just got a GSX Edge Plus. And there's the issue JR brought up, that having these duplicate apps where you just have a calendar and an email app on your Note 5 that just cannot be uninstalled because they're integrated into the system, and they can't even be disabled, because having the calendar app installed is an integral part of having your calendar syncing through Google to the device. But, you know, even if you install another calendar, like a Google Calendar or a Sunrise Calendar or something, you're stuck with two, and you're stuck with two browsers.
That's true in an iPhone too. So the difference is the iPhone only has one installed from the get-go.
But it's not true on a Motorola phone or a Nexus phone. It's not a requirement of an Android phone to have duplicate calendars.
Right.
And you know, there are, yeah, I agree. Everybody has the junk folder on their iOS phone with all the stupid default stuff that you can't uninstall. And I'm just as mad about it there as I am on the on the Note 5.
It's been fun watching everybody read through the CDD, the compatibility document for for manufacturers. And I actually read over it last weekend before everybody started writing about it. I think somebody had shared it on Google Plus, which is where I saw it and started poking through it. But it's funny. I think we need to be a little careful about how we see some of these things translating. Like, that's for manufacturers, guys.
Right. And we don't, I mean, there was the thing when we got the Note 5 where we go, oh, there's a lot of Googles that are not pre-installed here. That's kind of fun. Well, it's because it went through a compatibility test however many months ago. And, you know, when they update it and then when the phones are launched doesn't necessarily mean that they had to meet those. You know, there are different milestones in making a device. And
when something is going to slip through and everyone's going to be, but the CDD said, well, it's not for you. Yeah.
That's a different discussion between the manufacturers and Google about using Google apps. But, you know, I think JR is definitely right on where you're starting to approach a more holistic feel in these Nexus devices that just, you know, it feels like the hardware is made for the software and vice versa, where it just works together a little more than, you know, than it does on other phones.
That raises an interesting question, too, of what ultimately Google's goal is with the Nexus program. And I don't know that any of us can really answer for sure. I mean, we don't know what's going on in the minds of the powers that be there, but
and it changes. How many times do you and I talk about that?
right, exactly. I mean, from 1 year to the next, from 1 month to the next, you get a different impression. But I mean, are they trying to move toward a position where this is the device most people buy? I mean, certainly they're not going to shut out Samsung and say, hey, you guys can't make Android anymore. I mean, having the third party partners be able to put on their own stamp and even carriers be able to put on their own stamp is what made Android work from the beginning.
Yeah, and I don't think they have to tell them to stop making phones either or pull out the
webcam. No, and nor would they. No. I mean, even from a business perspective, that's what made Android work. People adopted it because it was free, it was open, they could do what they wanted with it. Carriers were obviously, you know, ecstatic about that idea. But then even more than that, I mean, that's been a big part of what's helped Android grow and develop. I mean, develop a lot of the innovation that's come to the platform, and the things we're starting to see on Nexus phones now, you know, have been things that they've kind of cherry-picked from different manufacturers. You see pieces of Motorola on this with, you know, the active or ambient display, as they're calling it here, and you see pieces of a lot of different manufacturers kind of coming in. You've got the double-tap home button, well, in this case, power button to start the camera. They're kind of taking the best of what everyone's done and using that for inspiration and bringing it into Android, and we've seen that a lot over the years. So, it would be interesting to know what their ultimate goal is, or at any given moment. And we probably never will.
I look around and just see how many, an amazing number of Nexus 5s and Nexus 7s they sold in the past 2 years. And I just think, you know, if they didn't care to have normal people use these phones, they wouldn't have sold many. I mean, they pushed those devices, not so much the Nexus 6. It ended up being kind of I think they tried for that higher end, like you talked about, and it just didn't work. But, I mean, I can walk around any street in any major city is in the U.S., and I see Nexus 5s and Nexus 7s all over the place. And I have a feeling that it's going to be similar with the Nexus 5X because it's just that, you know, solid device at a good price unlocked, and I think it's going to sell well.
When they were advertising it Sunday in primetime.
Yeah, and NFL.
That's something that's I still kind of laugh a little every time I see. The other day there was an ad for something. I mean, granted, I was flipping through it on a DVR, but there was an ad for something. It was just a Google app ad, you know, just showing people's OK Google and asking their phone things. And it was like the Google app, and it had a URL for it. It's like, wow, that is so different from the Google of a few years ago, where, you know, it was no marketing, no advertising. They're little by little moving toward that kind of level of consumer awareness that we never saw from Google. Google just never really cared in the past or never appeared to care.
I thought the watch ads they did earlier this year were some of the best I'd seen in a long time. I mean, that's like, to me, that's like Apple caliber of good advertising.
I mean, it was interesting because we saw the big kickoff about this time last year of the Android, just general Android campaign.
Yep.
Which talked about the diversity of all these different devices. And so it's just kind of cool that they could do both. They can promote just the Google app, which of course It runs on iOS and Android. You know, it runs on Nexus and LG at the same way. Versus they also will just run advertisements for just the Nexus devices, or, you know, just the Gmail app, or then more broadly Android for everybody, and not talk about specific features, just talk about Android as being an OS for multiple devices.
I tell you what, let's wrap that up for the Nexus this week. God, we could talk about that for another 40 minutes, but
you can talk about it next week when I've used one from.
Yeah.
And you know what? Let me throw one more little aside before we go, because I was going to mention this before, and then we got onto another topic real quick. But the fingerprint sensor, and it's pretty much the same on both phones. It feels a little different, but it's the same exact mechanics behind it.
Yep.
This is the first time, and I've used however many phones with fingerprint sensors over the years, the last couple of years, plenty of them, and I've never really cared. You know, it's like, okay, it's there, maybe I'll use it. It's never been like a standout highlight for me. On these phones, it has really been a high point. It's something that, having used it now, to go back, and when I have gone back and switched to a different phone for comparison or my own personal phone, I miss it. And I think it's the implementation, which is, you know, center of the back here, which ends up, for me at least, just being a very natural way to do it, because you kind of pick up the phone from your pocket or whatever. It's a little different when it's on a table, but if you're picking up out of your pocket, your finger just kind of naturally goes there, and pretty much instantly, let me turn off and do it.
There are people out there screaming right now, no, you're wrong. I have my phone on my desk.
Right. And, you know, that is true. That is a point of it. But, you know, so you have your phone on your desk. First of all, you can either use Smart Lock to tell it, don't lock when I'm at home or my office or what have you. Or you just pick it up and do your regular little pattern, because, as Andrew was saying earlier, with these phones, that's what happens. When you push the power button, you go to the regular lock screen.
Yeah, it gracefully falls back, which is the nice thing. You don't get on the Note 5. I mean, your only backup on the Note 5 is a 6-plus letter and number password. And yeah, it's just, you know, that's just not a graceful fallback.
LG, by the way, still keeps the double tap and the fingerprint.
Right.
If you double tap, then you have to enter a PIN.
But yeah, it is interesting that the double tap, which we've seen on some Nexus devices, is gone this year. So I guess that's technically still in the Android source code, I'm guessing, and they just opted not to use it here. I'm thinking
kernel level stuff, if I believe.
It would probably interfere a little bit with the ambient display, and I think, wasn't it the same on the Nexus 6 last year? Because if you're double tapping and then the ambient thing's coming on, you'd kind of have conflicting mechanisms.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, with the fingerprint sensor, it's gotten to the point for me, in my house, I've got Smart Lock set up so the phone doesn't lock. But even so, 9 times out of 10, I pick up the phone, and that's just what I do to turn it on. Because you do that, you skip the lock screen, and you're right where you want to be. So it's really just a thoughtful implementation that has been a selling point for me, personally using it, that I would never expect, because before fingerprint sensors, it's like, okay, cool, whatever, take it or leave it. This one actually makes a big difference in what the phone's like to use, beyond just the added factor of, you know, obviously having the security there.
Let's take a quick break. I'm going to run out and pick up my 5X because it just got delivered.
Oh.
And when I come back, through the magic of editing, not really, I'll wait. It's the right thing to do. God, I hate you all. Making me wait. Oh, like I've
talking
more
like
work
that,
to do.
Your phone's going to be broken when you
talk. Oh, really? You're going to feel bad now. You're going to feel bad when something happens.
When they shipped this thing, they didn't even put packing material in the box. It was literally the Nexus box just in a big FedEx box, just rattling around in there.
Why do you hate trees?
I'm like, come on.
All right, we'll be right back. We got some controversy to talk about. Hang on.
Oh, jeez.
All right, we've said it before, we'll say it again. This episode of the Android Central Podcast has been brought to you by Braintree. Developers around the world have embraced the Braintree V.0 SDK as the easiest way to add secure mobile payments to their apps and websites. No matter what payment type, Braintree accepts it. Maybe it's Apple Pay, maybe it's Android Pay. How about PayPal, Venmo, credit cards, even Bitcoin? And if something new pops up, they'll support that too. It's the same payment solution that's used by Uber, Airbnb, and GitHub, so you know it scales up. Integrating it into your app is as easy as inserting a few lines of code. But don't take our word for it. Try out the sandbox and see for yourself at braintreepayments.com/androidcentral. All right, are you ready? Are you ready?
What controversy?
HTC made an iPhone and everybody is losing it. Did they really make an iPhone? Or did the iPhone make an HTC device? Ah. JR, you've been doing this longer than me. You've seen them all.
I haven't had my hands on this one. So I'm going just on, you know, the pictures, the renders, the photos. But you know, the resemblance there is a little too much to write off as coincidence, I think. And I recognize there are things HTC's been doing, you know, the metal with certain placements, the plastic for the antenna. But when you look back at HTC phones prior to this point, they had their own distinctive look and design language. And this one very clearly looks like an iPhone. You know, okay, maybe it's still going to be a great phone. I'm not saying write it off because of that.
Right, that doesn't mean it can't have its own thing.
Yeah, and I also wonder too, and we'll see what happens now if there is any litigation, but how this would have flown in the Steve Jobs era when, you know, there were lawsuits flying left and right and a lot of this sort of vengeful feeling out there, or at least, you know, what we heard about, I guess, more after the fact. I got to wonder if this would have flown then as much as it may now, but that's really neither here nor there, but it's something that I couldn't help consider when it came out.
Owen Williams at The Next Web, very smart guy, wrote this morning that he thinks HTC did this on purpose for the free pub. And knowing as little as I know about HTC's new chief marketing officer, I could kind of see that. He's a little crazy in a good way, and sometimes maybe not in a good way. But here's my thing about that. If they did it on purpose, awesome. But run into that wall head first. Don't be, you know, well, look, guys, see, we made this design a long time ago, and here are all these phones that used it, and see, they came after us. And no, just run into that wall head first. Here's our phones. Here's what our phones have looked like. Here's why you should buy our phones. Like, they're getting off message so quickly and defending it when they should. I don't think they should be. If you're going to take that swing, take that swing. Then take another and tell me why I should buy your damn phone.
I think I mentioned that. I mentioned this in our chat before the podcast, and that some of people's first interactions with learning about the A9 is going to be HTC being defensive about, we did this first and this is our design, not somebody else's design, versus coming across the A9 as, hey, that's a cool looking phone, tell me about it, and talk about the camera, talk about the smaller size and this lighter software and the quick software updates and things like that. I think that this talk about, oh, this is our design and we didn't steal it from anybody or copy anybody, is too large a percentage of the marketing or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, you go to the HTC webpage now, HTC.com, and you click on the A9 thing. The second slide, when you scroll down, is a big picture of the phone with the bold headline, "Design Worth Imitating." So that's an interesting, what you brought up, Phil, an interesting theory that Owen posited, and I haven't read that article, but it does seem like they're kind of trying to drum up a controversy with it now that you mention it. I mean, if they were trying to slip one by and not have it discussed, you don't put "design worth imitating" as the headline next to the phone's picture when people are obviously going to be talking about it.
You just do it. And yeah, you do it and they say,
you talk about your own merits.
Exactly. And it's my God, we're in the middle of this ridiculous political season here in the U.S. Canada, by the way, you guys do it right. And I mean, it's like when you bring up something a politician doesn't want to talk about, they will give you, you know, 2 seconds of your answer and then immediately pivot into what it is they're talking about, and
well,
they get
the
back on message.
You should have asked is,
right. God, listen to basically any time I've ever heard Eric Schmidt talk, and somebody will just ask him some asinine question, and he immediately flips it back on him. And it's painful to watch for the questioner sometime. But it's the same sort of thing. You know, it's I think they're doing the right thing. They're just, the execution isn't there. And it's, for me, it's all about the message.
Part of it is done right, where they're saying, hey, there are all these merits for the way that we designed this thing. Here are all the details about it. We used a certain kind of aluminum. We treated it this way.
You mean there was a time that Apple didn't design their phones like this? We've been doing it for years.
So I just think then all of this, all the defensive stuff and the kind of semi-addressing, they've pretty much done everything except for say, this is not an iPhone, like specifically.
I was just looking down at the
big question now is, are people, like, all controversy, whatever aside, do people want this? Like, are there people who want a phone that, let's just accept the premise that it looks, sure, you know, somewhat like an iPhone. We'll agree on that for now. Do people, regardless of who made it first or whatever, do people want that? Are people looking for an iPhone that isn't from Apple? You know, a phone that has that design but is on Android? And I don't know. I think it's an interesting question, and I'm curious to see. You know, certainly HTC hasn't had huge success with marketing and sales in general lately, but if this will be able to change that, or is it just going to be one of those kind of like, what is this? If I want this, why won't I get the Apple one? Or for people who are on Android, I'm on Android, I don't want something that looks like an iPhone. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I haven't used the A9, but I've used the iPhone 6 plenty, and I don't think it's a very good ergonomic design anyway. It's kind of slippery and too thin and hard to hold anyway, but I think that they've put themselves in a tough position when, okay, so it's going to be on the shelves in, what, Sprint, AT&T, and T-Mobile stores, presumably in some capacity. And it's just going to be, how far apart in the store is this going to be from the iPhone 6, you know, at the next little kiosk over or something? And when you go in there and somebody's, you know, the salespeople was push you to go buy the iPhone, and then you say, I don't want to spend $700, are they going to say, oh, well, this one's only $500? And it looks the same, but hey, you know, runs a different operating system, whatever. I mean, is that how it's going to happen in stores? I mean, I think that would hurt HTC's brand image just organically with that happening in stores.
That's, yeah, that, I mean, that in-store experience is a whole nother thing too.
Which has always been messed up.
Yeah.
And you know, we know that how you design a phone is part of it, but it's also how it's presented in the store, how your sales staff is trained to sell it and things like that, which of course you just completely skip all that if you just sell it, you know, sell the Nexus in the Google store and that's it. But, you know, HTC still needs those carrier sales and they have limited marketing budget. It's kind of hard for them to control the message.
Message has always been HTC's struggle, and maybe this is the start of something new and maybe it will evolve into something more effective. But right now I just can't help but feel like it's this big giant apology,
you know, and of course we're talking about it more than kind of that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's totally working, by the way,
but
yeah, that's true.
But the funny thing is that it's not, indications are from Alex using the phone for a handful of days, that is not a bad device at all. Especially if you're talking about $400 in the US or some, a little less so when you're talking about the same price in the UK, but it's not a bad phone, but now it's not a bad phone, but like, we're not even getting to that point because all we're talking about is how it looks and how it's a ripoff of something else.
What would you think if you saw this phone kind of replace the M9 on shelves in the US?
I read somewhere that that's kind of what they're doing. I don't know if that's official or not. It wasn't from HTC, but I read that it was not going to be the flagship in most of the world, but in the US it would be replacing it. And I don't, again, that may or may not be accurate, but I've heard at least speculation about that.
And so, again, back to message. It's like,
to lose, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, it's just HTC hasn't gotten much in the US retail/carrier traffic outside of just the one line. I mean, they've done a couple of Desires. Just on carriers, just haven't done well at all. Even the low-end ones on the prepaid stuff just haven't done very well. I don't see, you know, I talked about seeing a Nexus 5 on every corner in the city. I don't see M9s anywhere. I see M8s and M7s because obviously they've been around long enough that they've kind of filled up. So, I mean, sure, only HTC knows how many M9s they're selling in different areas. And if they can't get the carrier to carry both, why not just stuff the one cheaper one that's new and they're pushing?
It's going to make like the next big release from HTC be really interesting, I think.
Oh, definitely. Is that going to follow this pattern now, or is it going to go back kind of to the 1M9 pattern or to something new? I mean, of course, the 1M9, no one expected to be that similar in appearance to the M8 and M7 before it.
Yeah, I think we're going to be due in the spring for a big reboot from them. And this is no inside baseball. I don't know anything. But it's, you know, the software, it's been a while. I mean, it's essentially been three versions of software now that are the same. And
that's the interesting thing they're doing on the A9 is the unlocked model kind of has this lighter version of Sense. Mm-hmm. That's kind of more don't want to say Googly or Google influence, but it's the lighter one because they don't, you know, they can do it all on their own because they're selling it direct online. Kudos to them for doing that, selling a direct unlocked version in the US, and they're offering updates within 15 days of when they go out to Nexus devices, which we'll see how well that holds up. But so they're doing interesting stuff like that with different software there, but at the same time, they have carrier models that are going to have a heavier version of Sense like you'd get on an M9, and you know they're not going to be on that 15-day update cycle, and it's just going to be more of the same.
So close, yet not so close.
Yeah, I've got to wonder, you know, what you were saying, Andrew, about how Alex was saying it was actually a pretty nice phone to use. Mm-hmm. If it didn't have that strong iPhone resemblance, say it was, you know, basically the same phone, but it's not quite as similar in design. So the same aluminum, whatever, but it's not quite as close to the design. How different this conversation might be. I mean, granted, there would probably be less conversation. People might be paying less attention to it. But sure, the people who did pay attention, I wonder if it'd be more, check this out, all metal phone, fast software updates coming out for $400. I wonder if it would skew more positive, at least within kind of the Android enthusiast camp of people who pay attention to this stuff and care about this stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas now, most of the conversation among Android fans is kind of like, what the hell? I don't want an iPhone on Android, which may or may not represent the broader population, but at least in the circles of people who, you know, the circles that we kind of travel around in, that seems to be more of what I'm hearing than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, there could be, in that situation, there may be, you know, I'm not saying you need to make it, shape it like a triangle or, you know, make it out of, you know, solid wood or something. But if it was a little bit different, there may not be as much conversation, but I think the conversation that would be happening would be serious conversation about, is this a good phone? Should I buy it? Versus right now, it's, all of the conversation is about, it looks like an iPhone. And so, yeah, okay, it has this other stuff. But, I mean, HTC did such a good job when they announced this thing. They did this virtual event, 20 minutes. They said, here, it has all of these things that, like I said, are people are asking for. A smaller device with light software, fast software updates, a good camera, good screen, solid materials, unlocked in this $400 to $500 price point. HTC just offered all of that stuff, and nobody cares because all they're talking about is that it looks like an iPhone 6. And that really stinks for HTC because I don't think that there's as much store convert, you know, people going into the store and buying things conversion rate on this discussion about how it looks like an iPhone.
Run into the wall head first.
That's what they need to do. There's also some weirdness with the pricing, and Phil and I were talking about this
the other day. Yeah.
You know, the $400 thing apparently is U.S. only, or at least I think U.S. is the main place, and it's described as being, you know, bold print on all the material says limited time promotional offer, for whatever that may or may not mean.
But they never said anything about that at the announcement. They said it's $399 unlocked.
Right, right. But then you look at any of the website and the promotional stuff, or the press releases all had that. And then apparently most other places in the world are selling for significantly more, which I think you guys... It must have been Alex. I know you ran a post somewhere that was, please do not buy this for, you know, whatever
that,
it was.
That was Alex. He's absolutely right.
What, 470 pounds?
The equivalent of about $700 US is kind of insane.
So what is going on there with the not only the little whatever it does or doesn't mean asterisk of promotional time price, but then the different prices, drastically different prices in other parts of the world. There's
different,
a lot of weirdness happening.
Different markets. You have to look at the separate business units of companies sometimes. And just because a company says HTC or Samsung, or it's, I had a fascinating conversation with one manufacturer about review units and the review unit process they have to go through of getting phones to get to us, and how it's really a business deal, and it's not just, they can't just like walk to the back and be like, hey, I need, you know, 1,000 phones to hand out to people, and you know, somebody has to pay for that at some point, and that all has to be accounted for, and it's, there's a whole lot of business that goes into everything. So
I mean, the important thing of looking at the prices is comparing it to other devices in that, you know, same region at the same price level. I mean, you can't compare dollars to pound, you know, dollars in the US to pounds in the UK. They have different tax structures and different, you know, regulations and things that change prices. But usually it's about, you know, you'd see $400 in the US, 400 pounds in the UK. And of course, that's more money over there. But, you know, they also have VAT and things like that that drive up the price. So the big thing that Alex was noting, though, is that at 470 pounds, it's almost iPhone 6S price, whereas in the US, we're talking about a $250 price difference between this and the iPhone 6S. We're talking about, I would assume that the pricing is looking similar to what the M9 costs, which is presumably a higher end device.
Yeah. No, he listed a whole bunch of phones. All right, let's move on from the A9. I want to answer some of these Q&As we've got here, since I have not prepared anything else. But we've got good stuff. Ryan Saldana, our pal, wants to know, JR, how disappointed are you with Motorola re the update situation? Do you blame Lenovo? Did Motorola get burned by Lollipop?
Yeah, I've written a few somewhat scathing things about mm-hmm. that over the last couple of weeks. It's God, it's been a big disappointment. I think all of us were, you know, set up and ready to expect Motorola as the next coming of Android. That, I mean, and there was a while there where I found a Motorola phone to be preferable over a Nexus phone. Going back to what we've been talking about, this cohesive experience and great user experience, Motorola was topping that for a while and matching or exceeding Google on timely rollouts. But yeah, I mean, I would be speculating to say if it's Lenovo, if it's not. Certainly something there changed in the last couple of years that coincided with that, the transition in ownership. And we know there are a lot of layoffs, so they're working with, you know, far fewer people than they used to have doing it. I'm sure that's part of it, too. But yeah, I mean, even before the Marshmallow disappointment, which most people listening probably know, but, you know, they said that they weren't going to upgrade any of the Moto E models, including one that came out earlier this year and another that was well within the two-year window, nor would they upgrade any of the 2014 Moto X US carrier models to Marshmallow, or at least as of now, those are not on the list to receive upgrades. But even before that, I mean, you know, Android 5.0 was a bit of a mess. It took forever to roll out to the first generation Moto X, and then 5.1, it took way too long to get to the 2014 Moto X, which, once Lollipop hit that device, once 5.0 hit that device, it was not the most stable in the world, so it really needed that update pretty desperately, and it took a lot of months. So something's changed, and I think we're all hoping they'll come back around, but it's going to be tough for them to re-earn trust, especially from hardcore Android fans who pay attention to this kind of stuff. You know, maybe the 5.1 stuff, you kind of say, all right, something happened and whatever. You got a little bit of an explanation for the 2013 Moto X Lollipop delay, but the more things that pile up, the harder it is to take their word at face value when they say, you know, prompt software updates, pure software and all that. So it's, I think this one's going to be harder for them to recover from.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Timothy wants to know, how do you guys feel about the A9? Does it stand a chance, and is it worth a buy? Yes, I think it stands a chance. Yes, I think it's worth looking at. That simple. In the US, anyway.
I don't think that any one phone has a chance to save HTC. It's more than one device.
Yeah.
Unless they plan to sell like 40 million HTC One A9s, but I don't think so.
Here's a big question I want us to try to boil down succinctly from Fat Produce. What do each of the major manufacturers bring to the table to differentiate their device lineups from others as of now? Samsung total package, I would say. LG
total package, if you like the Samsung.
If you like Samsung. Sure. LG, yeah. Really close, I still think. It's, God, they're such a strange company. Like, they do really good, and then it's like the last mile, it just kind of falls apart a little, in this case, software.
I always have a tough time answering that for LG. That's always my problem mm-hmm. with LG phones. And I tweeted something about this a few days ago, but it's kind of like they have all these elements and they always sound great on paper, but then they never quite come together to achieve a meaningful, special whole product that mm-hmm. stands out from the rest, at least for me. You know, and I mean, they have a lot of good elements, but a lot of phones have a lot of good elements nowadays, and it never quite has that whole. So I think I have a hard time answering that for LG, and that's my problem with reviewing LG phones.
Let's see.
Who else? Motorola. Yeah. Well, Motorola used to be the kind of pure plus, stock plus software. Mm-hmm.
Plus updates.
Fast updates. But that's the problem with their whole thing, is that was a core part of their new brand, and that brand is a little bit damaged right now. So I don't know at this point what... I guess they still kind of bring that in terms of user experience, but not so much necessarily in terms of updates. I mean, it's a matter of trust now.
Sony? Mm-hmm.
Interesting design, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they have good build quality, good cameras.
Good design, good battery.
Can't buy in the US.
Screens, but the... Yeah. And again, they kind of do they don't change a lot about how the software works. They just kind of change how it looks and ship it.
Here's a good one from Carl. If the Gene X had a chin, does the 6P have a unibrow? Okay, it's funny. It's not necessarily a good question.
I like that. I will say this thing is much less bad in person. Those early renders at League made it look horrendous. I think we all thought,
yep,
God, this is an ugly phone, but here, I'll try to get an angle here. It's really not that bad, at least on the black model. The lighter models is a little more of a contrast. You know, visually, you're going to love it or hate it, but
it's nowhere near as thick as the renders made it look at all.
And especially the black one. And you have to think about the necessity of having it there. So,
yep.
Either that or you have a bunch of antenna lines and you have stuff all over the place.
And then it looks like an iPhone, and then we're all writing editorials.
This is where everything comes out of the metal. So it's either that or it could be made out of plastic.
Here's a question we've gotten a lot over the past week or so from Roy. Target is selling the Nexus Player for $25. Is it still not worth it? No, I would absolutely buy it for $25.
$25 is a good price.
You get a remote, and I love, you know, I can hand my kids this remote, say, go watch something, go play something, and they're good to go. You can't do that with a Chromecast. I mean, you can.
You know, for $25.
Yeah.
If you're just going to play around with it for 2 days and it's going to amuse you, I mean, you probably got your money's worth at that point.
Well, that's the thing. Even if it's just a cast Target plus, like, Netflix to, you know, for the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Well, and you get the lean back. I'm sitting here firing stuff over. I don't have to deal with the menus on my phone, and this is a lot faster for me. I like remotes, and I like tactile, physical remotes.
Indeed.
Phones as remote controls are just a bad idea in general. George wants to know, and this will be for JR, I guess, how's the 5X battery holding up through a day?
You know, it's been interesting, and I'm still trying to figure it out, and I'm not saying that to withhold anything, but just in all honesty, I had a couple of days early on where I was feeling a little skeptical about it. It has never been like horrendous, but there were a couple days where, you know, I was taking a lot of pictures. And so those were then backing up to my Google Photos account. So that's burning through a fair amount of, you know, resources on the phone. And then, you know, by the end of the day, I was kind of cutting it a little closer than I would like. And my screen on time, you know, it's a relative measure, but looking at that, not quite as high as I would like. So I was going in a little worried. And I was a little skeptical. I will say since then, those were maybe my first day or two I used it. It's kind of leveled out for me. So like last night, you know, I got to the end of the day. I think my screen on time was like 3.5 hours and it still had, I don't know, a fair amount of battery left, 20-30%, something like that. So I haven't gotten enough consistency to reach a definite conclusion yet, but it's looking up from where it started. I still think the 6P may end up having at least somewhat of an advantage, but I think they're both going to end up being at least fine, you know, acceptably average, even if not exceptional. And I'll reserve the right to revise that after, you know, a few more days of use. I think I'm hoping, you know, I'll get enough consistency to reach a conclusion before long, but it's looking better.
Mike wants to know if the 6P feels as premium. I still don't like that word. In terms of the build quality and materials as the iPhone.
The P stands for premium.
Yes, it does. They said it does, so it must.
I'm just so glad it's not the Nexus 6 Premium. That would have been horrible.
Yes. Ooh, I think it's pretty close, yeah.
I'd say so. I mean, you've got different styles and different things, and I'll compare it because I don't have an iPhone here, but I have a Galaxy Note here, a Note 5. And even between those two, I would put them in very much the same ballpark in terms of premiumness or whatever we want to call it.
And we know Huawei can make good stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, this thing, the Mate S right here is really close as well.
The quality of the hardware in terms of like how it all comes together, where the seams are, where everything, you know, fits, has not been an issue for Huawei in the last 2 years.
Software, however?
Horrible.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of this. You're getting the Huawei manufacturing with a little bit of Google design flair and then Google all alone on the software. But yeah, I mean, between this and the Note, I'd totally put them neck and neck. It's really just a matter of preference. You know, you've got the glass, it sort of has a different look than the metal, but yeah, I'd say it's up there with the best of them in terms of build quality.
Craig has a question about, weird scrolling. Craig says, do you think the magnetic strip reading in Samsung Pay will come to Android Pay in any way? The feature really helps adoption rate until Tap and Pay NFC is more available. Also here in Canada, Tap and Pay transactions are capped at $100. Well, Samsung owns the technology that does the magnetic strip transactions, so no.
But I was totally thinking that same thing this week.
I mean,
how much would I like it?
There's a reason why Samsung bought LootPay, which is the company that did it, which as it LootPay in itself was in no way valuable company for anything but this magnetic strip technology or magnetic secure transaction technology. That's all the company was worth. And they made a good call on that. They then made a bad call by, you know, having crazy software restrictions. But, you know, the other side of this is that MST stuff requires specific hardware in the phone. So that's why it's limited to certain phones. And I don't see Google requiring that when you're not even required to have NFC in your phone as part of using Android. So they can't start.
Stay out of the CDD. Come on.
They can't require, or they can. They're going to require manufacturers put something like this, even if they did develop their own magnetic strip kind of authentication stuff.
See, now, now I have to look up NFC in there just to make sure you're right.
The OnePlus 2 doesn't have NFC. There's your example.
What was really interesting to me in the CDD, and if you haven't read it, just search for Android CDD. I mean, it's pretty like dry stuff. But the things that they say a device must do versus should do or may do or, you know, things like that, really kind of interesting, those differentiations. Device implementation should include a transceiver and related hardware for near-field communications. If it does not include NFC hardware in place to make it available to third-party apps, then it, blah, 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 must do all this stuff. I mean, so that was kind of interesting, I thought.
Didn't one of the Motos not have it? Is it Moto G? I feel like one of the recent lower-end Motos
G and the G and the E don't.
Right.
And actually, I guess we knew it wasn't required since OnePlus 2.
Which is what I just said.
I wasn't listening.
So, unfortunate. The $100 cap on Tap and Pay in Canada, well, that's a Canadian
problem. Look, you got healthcare. What else do you want?
Well, and they have more situations in which, I mean, I understand that, but as this gets adopted, that's really a carryover from having Tap and Pay credit cards and things like that they had way before phone Tap and Pay. And as, you know, this gets higher adoption, that could increase.
And I tell you, Samsung Pay hasn't actually sped up my transaction process any. So I stop and get coffee every morning. I tap the thing there. I still have to tell it if it's a credit card or a debit card.
Oh, ew. See, here's the problem. There's a merchant problem to this. Right. No matter how much they can control it on the Samsung's is very controlled, obviously. Certain phones, certain carriers, certain regions. But they don't know what the merchant does. And I mean, I've seen even just on Android Pay, I see different implementations. When I tap, I have to sometimes tap credit. Sometimes I have to enter a PIN. Sometimes I have to sign. Sometimes I don't have to do any of that. I just tap and I'm done. And so it just depends on how the retailers have implemented it. And that's the most frustrating part. It could be as simple as my last one where I just tapped and I just paid and I'm already walking out the door by the time that it's done versus, you know, I've had terrible experiences too.
It's mostly been good for me, but yeah, hadn't necessarily sped it up any. Fat Produce wants to know, are 5.7 inch screens becoming the new standard screen sizes these days? I don't know that I'd go that far.
Seems 5.5 is pretty.
They're the standard big size, I guess, but
screen size doesn't tell the whole story, as we know. There is a difference between 5.5 inches on an iPhone 6 Plus and 5.5 inches on like an LG G4. I mean, those are two different size devices, and the way they're shaped and the bezels and everything, it changes the way it can feel.
Well, I think I've seen written too, and I haven't looked at these measurements myself yet, but that the Nexus 6P is the same size, more or less, as the iPhone 6 Plus S. Wait, you know what I'm talking about. The new big iPhone, even though it has a larger screen. So yeah, bezels and design and all that make a world of difference there.
Yep. Fat Pro just wants to know, do you think it's worth getting the V10 or wait for the G5? Do you really want a big giant phone? If you want a big giant phone, V10. If you don't want something quite as big, wait for the G5.
Yep.
I have no qualms about that decision. All right, one more. Somebody pick one. Do you guys see it when I scroll through this?
No.
No, okay.
We have control of our own scroll.
Just checking. So
I'm trying to find one.
JR has knowledge. Google's end goal is to become iOS. All right,
end of podcast. We're done.
No, I like that question. I have no answer, but I like it.
No open source world. I disagree. Android is open source. Google locking down phones does not mean Android ceases to be open source.
And those things aren't mutually exclusive. Yeah. They can make a really nice Nexus phone that does all of these things that JR was talking about as, you know, upsides of a Nexus. That doesn't at all have to be tied to closed source Android at all.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with what you guys are saying on that. I mean, I think they are moving toward having more control within their own products, but that doesn't mean that they're also at the same time shutting off the open source thing, because that has really been a key part, like we were talking earlier, of Android's growth, not only business-wise, but innovation-wise. And, maybe as they've been more and more trying to do, they can, to some degree, have the best of both worlds. They probably have a line they don't want to cross to piss off their manufacturers too much, but they seem to have managed to toe that line pretty well.
And people also incorrectly conflate the difference between having open source Android and having requirements for using Google Apps and passing the compatibility suite. And, those are two different things. Gmail is not open source. Android, the operating system, is. Those are two different things.
People mistake, and Jerry reminds us of this all the time, people mistake a repository of code for being this other thing, and it's just not. And you see it all the time. Android is insecure. Well, no, that code there is updated a lot. That is different than Samsung's phones and Motorola's phones and blah, blah, blah. So you really have to keep that distinction.
No.
Or not, but you do. That's a good place to wind it down, I think. We're shy of an hour 30 this week. I'm trying to keep it under 90 minutes these days. It's getting crazy.
Yeah, we're doing good. We started a couple minutes late, so we're...
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that was my fault. I can't tell time anymore.
The recorded listeners have no idea.
So I know.
They're still waiting for us to start on Friday. We're a day early.
That's true. Should I wait and put this out now? We'll see. Yeah. I got some more stuff I got to do. It's insane right now. JR, thank you so much for joining us this week. Remind us again where we can find you on a daily basis.
Sure.
Address and social security number, please.
That will be listed in the comments of this podcast. But yeah, for now, I'll just tell you can find me Google+, Twitter, main places I hang out, so to speak. Hang out. Yeah. But yeah, and then if you just go to jrstart.com, you'll find links to all that stuff and my stories and lots of non-nude photos.
Sometimes we forget to tell our guests that each appearance comes with an automatic doxing, just on purpose. So.
Well, of course. That's the fee for appearing on the program.
Thanks for coming. Tell us all your stuff.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So next week, let me think what's going on. Two of the other guys will be back from the Big Android Barbecue. I can't wait to hear about that. Supposedly, Jerry is in the same room with... I can't believe I'm saying that out loud. Yeah, with John McAfee, who is telling people to root their phones to hide from the NSA.
I thought that was a joke when I first saw that he was going to this. I totally thought that was a joke.
But no, he's actually totally there, just like hanging out with people.
Wow.
So there's that.
What else?
Is he still wanted for something? Wasn't he on the run for a while?
Jerry?
Yeah, I didn't think he was.
Oh, McAfee.
McAfee. Yeah. I didn't think he was allowed back in the U.S.
Yeah, I thought he was still wanted for something, but I don't know. Jerry, too, but I mean, probably, yes. I assume.
Different things, I think.
He's just been hiding out.
So that's going to be some tales. Dallas, if you're not around next week, I'm sorry.
And we have Verizon and Motorola doing droid things.
Yep. So there's a lot going on. We will have a lot to talk about next week. In the meantime, if you haven't yet, go update the Android Central app version 2.0. I had a big meeting this morning about some things we need to fix. So work continues, but I'm loving it so fast. Looks so much better. So go get that if you haven't already. What's that?
You go listen to last podcast if you want to learn about the redesign a little bit.
Had a lot of people say thanks for having Mike on to talk about that, and we need to have more developers, and I agree. It's a whole nother world that I'm just not a part of, mostly. And again, if you haven't listened to Chris Lacey's podcast, I think you totally should. Go follow us on the Instagrams and the Twitters and the YouTubes and all that stuff. YouTube Red, we didn't talk about that. $10 a month subscription. But I guess we also get that with Google Play Music, though, right? So we're good.
Yeah, apparently it's tied in, which we that was kind of lost in the shuffle. But it's pretty much just the same as, you know, we had the ad-free on music videos. But now we just get it with the videos, too.
Cool.
Not bad.
Yep. Well, Andrew, JR, thank you guys. Everybody listening at home, thank you. Everybody listening live, you guys rock too. Thanks for joining us a day early. Sorry to spring it on you like that. I've just had a really, really weird week and needed to get this done. So thank you for putting up with my strangeness. And I think that's it. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Say bye. Wow.
JR can say bye too.
JR's like, nope, not doing it.
I gave in to the peer pressure. I waited, but...
All right, see y'all. That outstanding episode of the Android Central Podcast was brought to you by Red Hat, enterprise open source software trusted in the world's most demanding data centers. From the trading floor of the New York Stock Exchange to the animation studios at DreamWorks, Red Hat lets enterprises large and small tap into the remarkable innovation of open source without the risk of doing it all themselves. Red Hat, different for the sake of better technology. Find out how at redhat.com.